Canada's Queer Media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
This is true. You look like you just got a haircut. And I feel like you are like secretly a drill sergeant somewhere. I'm getting very drill sergeant
vibe. It's a bit shorter than what I wanted, but the day you should judge whether or not you got a haircut is a week after the day you got it. Because most really good haircuts look pretty disappointing the day you get them.
Mm.
So we'll see how it grows in. But it is a little bit shorter than what I had intended.
It's almost a cream cut. Sort of.
Almost. It's meant to be a faux hawk.
Oh.
But it's not. Oh. It's not very long.
Yeah, you have neither the faux nor the hawk.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's...
we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, well, you can't really ask for a refund, can you? Like, I'd like my hair back, please. That's not really a thing that happens.
My hair grows a little bit quickly, so, I mean, that's fine.
That's fair. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of things that are happening this week, I wanted to talk about a story that came out that had me a bit surprised. Oh, my God, there were so many stories.
Good surprised or bad surprised? Or just caught off guard?
A little caught off guard, actually, because a part of me is like, what? So it was an article about going to visit Wales. Here we go. I found it.
Yeah.
It was on Toll Road. Here's a beefy list of reasons Wales needs to be next on your UK gay travel itinerary. Now, part of me thinks that maybe Visit Britain, the company, give them some money to do advertising. But I am Welsh. I grew up in Wales.
Well, the other thing is, Wales
doesn't strike me as a pro-gay. You know, it's not. But it's not like a go-to destination. You know what I mean?
Do you know what Wales is known for, among other things that the rest of the UK is known for?
Taryn Egerton.
Meat pies. Get it? Beefy reasons to visit Wales?
Okay, so this actually is a sponsored post.
Okay.
By Visit Britain, encouraging people to go and visit different parts of Britain.
And eat meat pies.
And, yeah, apparently the entire premise of this entire post is that Wales is famous for rugby, and rugby players are beefy men, hence beefy reasons to go visit Wales.
It's also known for Tom Jones, and isn't Rod Stewart Welsh?
Yes. Well, Taron Egerton, who is the guy playing Elton John in the new Rocketman movie,
is
in a bit of a dispute at the moment because the film studio has asked the film producers to cut out a scene, a lovemaking scene between Taron Egerton and the guy who was in 50 Shades of Grey, and no, not him. He was in The Bodyguard, Matt Nohan, I think it is. Anyway, those two were playing the two characters because Elton John is a gay man.
Right, yes.
Married to a Canadian, David Furnish. They have children in the UK. So that's a key part of what there is. Anyway, so they want to cut out this sex scene, which has some partial nudity, because they want to have the film to have a PG-13 rating. And they worry that the movie ratings people would give it an R rating if they kept this scene in.
I can't imagine 13-year-olds being keen on a biopic about a celebrity from the 70s and early 80s.
And 90s? And 2000. I mean, it's Elton John.
Yeah, but I mean, I really do think of, like, Can You Feel the Love Tonight as being his dark years.
You know? Well, anyway, the whole point is that we're looking at this effort by the studios, which is valid. They want to make sure it's family-friendly in that they'll get more bums in seats, more ticket sales, more box office revenue. They made the film to make money. But what we're looking at is one of the biggest criticisms against Bohemian Rhapsody, which is the biopic about Queen, is that it straight-washed
Freddie Mercury.
Freddie Mercury. Like, there was very little gay happening with him, even though he was a gay man, identified as a gay man.
Although, and I know I've mentioned this before, that's not the studio's fault. That was the surviving members of Queen didn't want that. They didn't want it to be a Freddie Mercury story. They wanted it to be about the band. Like, the band wanted Freddie Mercury to die halfway through the movie so that the rest of the movie could be about how the rest of the band struggled and persevered and kept going. And, you know, it's there's conflict between the surviving members in the band. Like, we're not going to see... We're probably not going to see a good Freddie Mercury movie during our lifetimes.
Well, during their lifetimes, anyway.
Well, when the last one dies, plus I think it's 25 years. That's when we can just ignore their wishes.
Absolutely. So, well, I mean it's difficult because the media, there's been a media backlash, and I think this is you know, us taking issue with the media kerfuffle again. But it is. You know, they've essentially got a studio wants to axe gay sex scene. Well, they want to hit a broader audience. They want to make it more accessible to people. You know, and those are the reasons why, and they're good reasons. They make sense. It's a movie studio.
I mean, could they reshoot it to be non-naked? Like, start off, like, you know, under the jeans, over the underwear, and then fade to black? Like,
yeah, stumble into a room. Room door closes, kind of very suggestive.
Yeah, then you hear thumping noises for, like, 30 seconds. Not 30 seconds, for 3 seconds, and then fade to the next scene. Like, there's
montage
a
montage of random animals making noises. Yeah.
Just, like, monkeys just getting into a fight.
Actually,
that would be... No, because everybody would assume that that was some kind of homophobic commentary, so probably not. Yeah. But, I mean, there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it where you can clearly indicate these two dudes got their Mac on without showing actual nudity and without showing anything.
Well, they already have just partial nudity. I think you see a bit of one of their bums, and I think that's about it from what I've been able to read so far. So it's not really, it's not like you're turning into triple X tube. I assume that's a thing. I don't know, but
it's just X tube.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're not like purveying adult cinema whilst you're watching this biopic.
There's differences though. In Europe, a bum is not necessarily inherently sexual. Like, they do understand the notion of non-sexualized nudity. Like, I have seen movies that were considered, that were labeled as being family friendly from France that had full male nudity, but it was like, you know, somebody like opened a door and there was a guy showering and he's like, "Oi, I'm in here," and that was not considered sexualized. Like, nudity is not inherently sexualized. But the moment you start looking at the US and Chinese market, which is where most movies make their money these days, you get into a very different game in terms of what is considered to be acceptable and not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the worry, is that in the US market, the US ratings agencies are the ones that are most likely to be like, no.
Yeah.
No homosexual nudity. R rating. And maybe that's something that we need to take issue with the R rating agency. But... who knows? We won't really find out until, I think it's May when the film comes out. So we'll have to wait and see. Back to Wales.
Okay.
So Tyrone Egerton has actually brought the profile of Wales up quite a few times on his press junkets for the movie, the Rocketman Elton John biopic. So I thought it was weird reading through this sponsored post by Visit Britain, and they were talking about there have been pride parades in Cardiff, which is the largest city in Wales. There's about 3.3 million people in Wales. About a million of them live in Cardiff. So one in three people in Wales are in Cardiff.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Torchwood did more for LGBT tourism in Cardiff than any advertising they've ever done.
And it was just everybody thirsting after...
all those Welsh boys in the
absolutely,
back.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Barrowman.
Yeah.
Who's a Scottish American, but that's...
So, Pride Cymru, or the Wales Pride, happens in Cardiff.
Right.
And they also have prides in Aberystwyth, Bangor, and Swansea. And they also put down even the small
community... Swansea has a pride.
Even the small community of Chantwyt Major. I don't think that's... I'm sure it's Chantwyt Mawr, but whatever. And why is Swansea having a pride parade in May? It's raining, it's dreary, Why would you go there?
It's Wales. Why is it not raining
and dreary? That's true. I think it's
either raining and dreary or you're up in the hills where it's always foggy.
That's true.
Like, those are your options.
Yep. I think the last time I saw sunshine in Wales was the summer of 1956.
The last time you saw sunshine in Wales was when God parted the clouds to rain angry fire on the people.
And yeah. Back in the days when Earth was created was the last... In between Earth being created and rain being created, there was a brief period where Wales was dry.
Right.
It was a very exciting moment for everybody. Anyways, it really surprised me to see a country that I don't attribute much to being like a gay mecca sort of being pushed as one.
I would visit Wales, but not as
a gay mecca.
As a gay man, I would be visiting Wales because I like European stuff. Like, I, as you know, I have a weird obsession with Belgium that even I can't explain. And Wales, being a rainy place, I'm sure has that particular shade of super intense green that only shows up in places where the rain just never stops. Like, all those pictures of Ireland you've seen, they did not turn up the saturation on that. That's the color of Ireland. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Wales is also equally beautiful, just, you know, where... watertight clothes while you're there.
Yeah, no, it takes about 3 months to get the damp out of your clothes when you come back. But Wales is absolutely beautiful as a country. It has more castles per square inch than anywhere else in the world. The people are very friendly, unless you're English and being a dick.
Yeah.
Like from England.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just so much to see and do. But I don't know if, like, of all of the things to push, you know, for Welsh people in Wales, and actually I brought this up last, whenever I got back from my grandmother's funeral there, and I was telling you about, I heard that there was a pride parade in Chanechi, the town I grew up in.
Yeah.
And that it was out on the edge by the water and not downtown, because they didn't want to upset the local chavs and the local bullies, and, you know, there was still a fear that there could have been some degree of violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in some small communities across Wales, there was still this hesitancy, this caution, with particular more violent elements. But, you know, anyway, so I saw it and I was like, that's bizarre.
That is something that the UK in general has in common with, actually, the UK in general, Scandinavia in general, and Canada in general, all have this common thing where homophobia is becoming rarer and rarer by the day, but when you do see it, it's like, oh crap, you're stuck in the 60s there, buddy. So, like, there are rural communities in Ontario that are known for terrible homophobic violence, but these are also like little holdouts.
Yeah.
And I had a Swedish friend who lived in the Malmö region, and he said that by and large, his days are perfectly fine. But if anything happens, it's not going to be somebody saying a word they shouldn't say. It's going to be somebody grabs you by the hair and drags you into an alley. He's like, there's no middle ground on this. There's no mild homophobia. It's either they don't care and they're accepting, or
there's apathy and extreme.
Yeah. And it's when it is like the extreme stuff is like once a month someone in Sweden, something will happen to them. And once a month is actually really not that much in the grand scheme of the population of Sweden, but it's still not great. And it still involves a hospital visit, which is super not great.
You know, I think maybe for me it's the difference of looking at things as a tourist and looking at things as a local.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that we always see a lot of stuff about, you know, the 20 best gay bars to visit in Bangkok, Thailand.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, cool, but, like, is there, you know, what's the right situation for folks in Bangkok?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, if the police do a raid, which they might, because you have a foreign passport, they may just say, go back to your hotel and leave sooner than scheduled. You're not going to go to prison for anything.
Or they would raid the bar that's popular with locals, not the bar popular with tourists.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is they just imagine the paperwork difference to begin with.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that part, and I'm thinking, this really, when it was like your own country, and you're like, maybe this home of tourism is a bit of a thing to think about. And it got me thinking about the fact that in Canada, all of the major pride festivals don't ever fall on the same weekend.
Yeah.
Within reason. there's only oh so many weekends in the summer that yeah. one can play around with. Some festivals, such as Pride Toronto, thinks that they can do every weekend in an entire month until they run out of cash recently. But, you know, it's broadly speaking, every festival is on a different weekend. So,
yeah, so like if Nanaimo and Halifax do it on the same weekend, I'm pretty sure there's... That's going to impact, like, yeah. two people in the entire... Like,
oh, gosh. I really wish I could jet from one end to the other. Like, it's not going to be a thing.
It's not much of an issue. But, like, normally people will coordinate with the neighboring cities. So the Ottawa, Kingston, Toronto, Hamilton...
Montreal.
Even going a little bit further to, like, Guelph in London, Ontario, you're still going to get people... staggering themselves, but Toronto's probably not going to care what Edmonton's up to. Actually, no, Edmonton may not be a good example.
But there are a lot of, in the corridor, the Montreal-Toronto corridor, even in a lot of the smaller communities, so like, I know Minden has a pride, for example.
Minden.
Yeah, it's lots of little, smaller areas. Well,
Tweed has a pride, so why not?
Well, Belleville does, but it's like the satellite of whatever. But the whole point is, you know, and I think that there's a lot to be said for maybe going and seeing rural Ontario. And I always think that visiting rural Ontario, rural Canada, or just visiting other parts of Canada. Yeah. There's a great term that got popular in the UK about they were promoting staycations instead of vacations. Yeah, that's where you just visit. And Canada is so freaking big that you could easily spend your whole life just visiting different bits of it. But anyway, I think if you are going to visit Canada, and this week's episode is brought to you by Visit Canada. We don't get any money off
them.
No money off them. Although if you do want to, let me know. Anyway, but the whole point is, you know, if you're visiting Canada in the summer and you are a gay man or a trans person or lesbian family or whatever, it is very easy to actually schedule to visit towns and cities and villages that are having the local prides because they're all over the timetable. I've done that a couple of times visiting certain little areas, and the small town prides are frankly the best.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know I've mentioned it before, but the Sarnia Pride was one of the best prides I ever went to. Hamilton being a close second, but it depends on what year. Because one year they tried to go family friendly, and it was a good event, but it wasn't a pride event. It didn't feel like pride. It felt like they set up like a Ferris wheel and like bumper cars and things like that down by the pier, and it was supposed to be a big family friendly event. And I'm sure that if you were a lesbian couple from the suburbs, that it was the best pride ever. But, you know, there's a lot of people in the community who are not married with kids who kind of went and said, you know, like I personally, I hope I don't divide the audience too much about this, and I hope I don't generate too many complaints, but I detest cotton candy. And
that's it. When the phone is going to be off the hook. We'll have the cotton candy lobby on us. It'll be great.
It burns on my tongue. I don't know how to explain it.
Are you sure you're having cotton candy, not battery acid?
It doesn't feel good when I eat it. But it was just, I don't know. It was meh, but it was like drag queens running carnival shows. So that was fun. Watching like a drag queen do the toss the bag bean into the bin
and
thing.
Slowly melt under the sun. Yeah.
No, it was raining that day.
Oh no. Oh, that's amazing.
Still though, I mean it was innovative, and you see a lot more creativity and innovation in the small and medium town prides. You see things that you would never see in the big cities.
Absolutely.
Or you would, but it's always scheduled with something else that you for some reason or other can't skip.
Yeah. So we are going to be playing a song. This is called Spirit in the Sky. It is Norway's official entry to the 2019 Eurovision Song Contest. And what I love about this song is that it is so textbook Eurovision.
Yeah.
It's got the slow, talky build-up, silence, and then the bass drops, and then, you know, throw in a bit of random local native language halfway through, and some drummers, and some naked dancers, and just like the whole shebang.
The linguist in me was super happy that I could spot it, that it was Sami, and the Samoitic languages were in Scandinavia before Europeans were in Europe. So it's this old, old language. And the guy looks like a Norwegian pit bull. It's hilarious. Absolutely. And he's got a deep voice and everything. It's hilarious.
So this is Kino's Spirit in the Sky featuring Norwegian pit bulls. And we'll be back just after this. You can go back when the sun rises again. Just stay tonight. Just stay. Listen, my spirit lost in the night. The violent light shape took away my light. They call us nothing. My name is nothing. Come see me. Please see me. Cause I've been ready with the demons now. They'll see my feet. They say there's nothing. Nothing here. I see a spirit in the sky. And all the lights are dancing. Hola, Eloila. I hear you calling me at night. Daylight shines away. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
Now, over the past, what a weird pronunciation of it.
Past.
Over the past week or so. I just went very English then. It was over the past week, I do declare. But no, it was over the past week or so, the Alberta election has been really, the provincial election in Alberta has been really heating up. And one of the things that's become sort of a cause du jour of the left, and weirdly enough also the right of the Conservative Party there, is Jason Kenney's record on LGBT rights.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about this before, weeks before, when it emerged, and I think it was a, we met the guy because he went to Carlton. A political character on Twitter who actually unearthed the clip of Jason Kenney being like, yeah, I introduced rules that effectively meant, or overruled a law that effectively meant that same-sex partners of people dying of AIDS in San Francisco at the height of the epidemic were turned away at the door. And that was something that Jason Kenney not only was instrumental in making happening, but also shortly after that even bragged about.
Okay.
So that was quite something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talked about it. We talked about how the Conservative Party and Jason Kenney have apparently addressed that in the past. It is something that they feel like they have. they had dealt with. And it sort of bubbled up into the media and then bubbled away again.
Right, okay. What did they do? Because, like, on the one hand, I mean, I really do believe that there should be a road to redemption for past bad decisions. But do you know what he actually did or what he and the NDP feel like they did that accounts for that?
So the NDP issued a 10-minute documentary, I suppose it could be called.
Okay.
Which really looks into it. And it was Jason Kenney's role in overturning a 1989 San Francisco, my gosh, law that expanded partnership rights to same-sex partners at the height of the AIDS crisis.
Right.
So what this, in effect, meant is, you know, there was a whole bunch of things, but one of the things that it allowed for is partners to have rights of access, and they were consulted, for example, when their partners were dying of AIDS in hospitals.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, we're talking about gay men left, right, and center withering away into skeletal nothings.
Yeah.
So the NDP ad really hones in on it.
But where's the redemption? That's the thing.
So the from Kenny of Kenny?
Yeah. Like what has he done since then? Because if so, nothing, then yeah, let's nail the guy to the wall. But I mean, it's
yeah. So let me just find out because it he has addressed it. I have to change what like, I'm looking for. It.
When Obama was a senator, he voted against gay rights on multiple occasions, and then in his second term, he came out and apologized publicly for it, and talking about how he evolved and all that sort of thing. And it doesn't wash away what he did when he was still a senator, but it did. It was definitely on the road to redemption, and I think by the end of his second term, he had done right by the community. So I mean, I really do feel there should be a path forward, because if there isn't a path forward, what's the point? You can just be a jerk and who cares? No one's ever going to forgive you. If there's no possibility of forgiveness, why bother trying to be a good person? You're going to make a mistake anyway. Like, I feel pretty strongly about this. But if Kenny has done nothing, absolutely nothing since then.
So what he said, and this is what he's quoted as saying in the Calgary Herald, "To be clear, contrary to the attacks of my political opponents, my opposition to the Domestic Partners Ordinance when I was a teenager in the 1980s was not based on a desire to limit partners from visiting their loved ones in hospitals, but over concerns about the legal implications for the definition of marriage. At exactly that time, I was volunteering at the San Francisco Gift of Love AIDS Hospice, and I am quite sure there were no restrictions on intimate partners or anyone else visiting their loved ones there. I would never have occurred to me to oppose such a thing." Hmm. So he's now saying that no, I was fighting against implications on marriage, not anything else. But when we look at it,
and to be fair, there is an old debate within the community itself, within the LGBT sphere, where there's people saying we don't want to force the state to force religion to marry us. We want a separation of church and state. If churches don't want to marry us, then we don't want to be a part of those churches, and we want this to be civil. Like there is a division within the community itself about marriage. So I mean, this is not ideal, but this is less bad for sure.
I mean, I disagree, and he may have been volunteering at, it sounds like, a religious hospice.
Okay.
That's not a hospital where the access is very different.
Hospices are where you go to die. Hospitals are where you go to get better.
Absolutely.
There's a huge difference.
Yeah. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors approved the measure to extend hospital visitation rights and bereavement leave policy to same-sex partners, but it was repealed. So that specific measure was repealed after a public ballot measure that was being advocated for by Jason Kenney. Okay. So he may have been worried about the implications of the definition of marriage, but the ballot measure specifically addressed the Board of Supervisors' visitation rights policy and bereavement leave policy,
okay.
Both of which would relate directly to gay men being able to visit their loved ones in hospital.
Right.
I don't know, it's really interesting because not only is it that particular story, but they're painting him in a picture of being incredibly hostile to LGBT rights. Now, this is important because there are LGBT Albertans. Like, oh, they do exist. Calgary, Edmonton.
They're big centers.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Lethbridge as well. So, you know, it makes me think that there's a lot more to it here. If we look back to November, when Jason Kenney was opposing the Gay-Straight Alliance bill, so that was the one, if you remember, if you cast your mind back, there was a political, somebody was involved with the party who, I can't remember, it was such a long, convoluted story. But essentially, they wanted to make it illegal for teachers to inform, or to not inform parents that their child has joined the GSA. So what the bill would have done is required... What the bill would have done would make it illegal for teachers to reveal a child is in the club unless the child consented. So that means that it is illegal to out children in these clubs without the child's consent. The Conservative Party leader says it gives the unnecessary powers to the Education Minister and was an attempt at deflecting attention away from other policies.
I understand the Alberta Conservatives have a little bit more of a libertarian flavor to them, if I remember correctly. I think it's Alberta that their Conservatives are a little bit more libertarian. So they tend to lean a little bit more on the don't tell me what I can and can't do side of the Conservative dialogue. And every so often you see Conservative Albertans doing what you would expect the left to be doing, and you're like, really? And then it's like, oh, okay, it's there's a libertarian in the party who's just saying, like, that's we don't tell other people what they can and can't do. But then there's also the religious right, which is also still alive in the it's
yeah
peculiar. Like, it's,
I mean, the argument being made by the NDP during this particular bill, the kids in GSA's bill, yeah, was that there was so much talk from the Conservatives about how there's a parent's right to know, that they very much felt that there would be a push under Conservative rule to out kids attending GSAs to their parents.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about that before, and we talked about how, I think in some cases, up to 60% of homeless youth are LGBT identified.
Yes.
Being kicked out of home for being gay or trans is a major leading cause, or one of the leading causes, of youth homelessness. And
I mean, they don't do that with other things. Like, if you're in theater or football, the supervising teacher doesn't have to tell the parents.
Yeah, I'm so sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Plant, but I'm afraid your child...
plays the clarinet.
Is in the... has joined the lacrosse team.
It's...
No! No, not my child! Not lacrosse!
It's... I mean, if there was a general policy that if children are involved in an after-school program, that the parents have to know that they're in an after-school program. So if the parents are like, where are you on Tuesdays? They can just be like, oh, they're in a thing. And whether or not the kid tells you what it is, that's up to them. Like, that seems like a safety issue that I think you could argue in favor of.
I mean, it's more in line with the UN International Rights of the Child Treaty, for example, which actually advocates for the autonomous rights of individual children. And it's important, and we talked about this before, about balancing the right of parents to know where your child is and what the child's doing with and the obligations of protecting the rights and privacy of the child.
Even beyond the right to know, there's also just the safety issue, where knowledge can help promote safety. But, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And I think it's just a matter of finding that right way and wrong way where you don't out a kid. Because they're called GSAs, and I'm sure your average GSA does have quite a few, like, a lot of straight people in them, because it is the Gay-Straight Alliance. There is an assumption that if you're in the GSA, you're either gay or your best friend is gay, and the parents can usually guess, or they'll jump to conclusions or whatever. So, I mean, it's...
So, we're going to switch it up a bit. We're looking at sort of expanding more on this issue. But changing tone slightly, I want to talk about something else that came up this week in Canadian news, and that is the push to have a ban on conversion therapy.
Oh, right,
now, the Canadian Association of Psychologists, I think it was, have called it just like
torture.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The World Health Organization called it torture. I think the Canadian Association just said, frankly, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, it's a waste of everybody's time when it's more mentally damaging than not.
And the American Psychological Association, of which Canada is a member,
mm-hmm.
Also said that it's torture, and furthermore, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. So this is the MP for... I think it's Saskatoon, MP Sherry Benson, staring up and calling for a ban on national ban on conversion therapy, following 18,000 signatures on a petition.
And that could step on a lot of toes, because there's a lot of lobbyism in other departments. Well,
didn't the government have to officially stop sending homeopaths to Nicaragua? I think that was a story. And everyone's like, why do you keep sending homeopaths?
Yeah.
Like, you know, send us qualified GPs. That would be really helpful. But no, it was may not be Nicaragua.
And it's really weird, because if you talk to the medical field, a lot of them will say, like, no, there's, we're not, you know, discounting other things, because there's a lot of things out of traditional Chinese medicine that's been shown to work. But actually, I found out recently that apparently China banned acupuncture for 120 years, because they showed in the 1600s that it just doesn't work. Like, when they started doing science on their own medicine in Chinese history, they're like, oh, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. People were doing it anyway. Plagues were spreading, and the emperor was just like, well, ban it then. So yeah, it's really weird that we're doing all the Chinese medicine stuff that the Chinese won't do, but then not the stuff that... anyway, unrelated, but... I mean, it's... some of this is a human rights issue, and some of it is an issue of it fits into a huge political landscape involving special interest groups and funding and precedent.
Religious groups. Freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Canadian Psychological Association says that it opposes any therapy with the goal of repairing or converting an individual's sexual orientation regardless of age.
Mm.
Lots of countries have banned conversion therapy on children, for example. Ontario has made the practice illegal by initiating an outright ban. Manitoba has outlawed health professionals. Vancouver passed a law restricting businesses. And Nova Scotia made it illegal for health professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of provinces on the list that have nothing in place, including Alberta.
Yeah.
But we'll have to wait and see what happens there.
Meanwhile, Puerto Rico did a ban. Puerto Rico technically has a skeleton government. They are a protectorate territory of the United States and are hardly, like, they are just barely an autonomous, self-governed region. And even then, there's a lot of things that they're not autonomous and self-governed, and even they could pass a law saying, well, I mean, to be fair, when you have small regions with smaller populations, it's much easier to pass laws.
Well,
but still,
I think New Zealand banned semiotic rifles within 3 days. That was
New Zealand is famous for just doing like electoral reform in a weekend, because it's a small country with not many people, so you have the freedom to move. It's a good lab for the rest of the world. Iceland as well, they do a lot of things where they're...
So anyway. Puerto Rico is the 15th state to ban conversion therapy in the U.S. They attribute it to
It's not a state, it's a territory. It's
but yeah,
messed up.
The 15th...
They need to fix...
Locale in the U.S. to ban... conversion therapy. Specifically for them, it's on minors.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there is an argument that came out of the States, which I don't fully agree with, but it's, you know, when you don't agree with somebody, but where you see where they're coming from, and you're like, I don't agree with you, but you're not an idiot either, where there's a few places where they're saying, if you're 25 and older and you can demonstrate there's no coercion, you should have the right to sign yourself up for this if you want it.
Hashtag no coercion.
And it's... part of me is like, but it's a stupid thing that doesn't work. But on the other hand, if you are a consenting adult and you can demonstrate a lack of coercion, I mean, that's not the worst. I don't know, it's...
Speaking of the worst, Conchita Wurst, the former singer of Eurovision, you kind of set me up perfectly for that segue.
You know, every time you make a segue, I want to light myself on fire. It's just...
So, Conchita Wurst so has released a new hit called Hit Me, and, like, looks nothing like the Eurovision Song Contest winner from before.
Right.
Big, big change. I love the hair. You're not a fan. Anyways, we'll be back to wrap up just after this.
Hit me with the bullets you make up in your head. Hit me with the pain that you came to get. Hit me with your threats that were left unsaid. Hit me with your bull and don't dare to pull back. Hit me with the blame you made up in your head. Hit me with regret. I am me, you are you. Hit me with your bull and don't dare to pull back.
Still Luke Smith.
And I'm still here.
And Still Here is very excited for our next conversation. That actually is a bit of a controversial conversation because the Vancouver City, and the headlines have been City defunds Women's Rape Crisis Center.
Okay.
Which is not really the whole truth. It's very sort of a little bit misleading.
Okay.
So,
I mean, you know, most headlines are pretty misleading these days.
That is very true.
There's a bit of a problem with that.
The City of Vancouver provides an annual grant to the Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter every year. Now, the Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter has a long-standing policy of explicitly denying services to trans women. Sorry, the hiccup there. So they do not serve trans women.
Okay.
Now, trans advocates have argued that in doing so, they have no right to access public grant money, public funds, if they are discriminating against certain members of the public.
Right.
Now, there's been legal changes. Bill C-16, for example, has happened since then. I actually believe that the Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter was one of the people arguing against Bill C-16 as a witness in the Senate. I have a vague recollection of that happening. But
do you know the reasons for why they're denying services?
Yeah, so let me find the direct wording that was used. Okay, so some of that they have a policy, and it means that the organization serves people who are born with female sex organs, that's cisgendered women, and not geared to those who are transitioning, who are trans women. They argue that because of this basic principle that they are fundamentally working with people who were born as women, that their conscious raising work, so the sort of a degree of their education and outreach, I suppose, and the support groups and the peer counseling work are not services that are made available to trans women. Okay. So their argument is that...
Will they support trans men?
Well, no, it's a women's shelter.
Okay.
But they're defining women as somebody who is born...
I know. I mean, okay, so it sounds like... Okay, so the kind of person who would turn away a trans woman saying they're not really a woman is not necessarily enlightened enough to see a trans man as not being a woman anymore.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because they were born women.
Yeah.
Right. I think that would just more confuse me and the audience than really help.
And the other thing is, would they support a woman who is sexually assaulted by another woman?
Mm.
Or would they say, oh, we're not built for that?
No, it's the issue is around specifically trans women. They flat out refuse to work with trans women in a number of their services.
Okay.
Now, there was a BC law in 2016. I mentioned C-16 passed federally in 2017, which prevented discrimination based on gender identity or gender expression. The city of Vancouver and many others argue that their public funds should be held to the highest ethical standard.
Yeah.
And therefore, they can't be providing funds to an organization that explicitly discriminates mm-hmm. on the grounds of gender identity and gender expression.
Because I think, and this is just me being devil's advocate here, if they said we can't service them because we don't have the facilities for it, then... If, as a result of that, the city of Vancouver said you have 2 years to get your house in order, you have 2 years to implement the ability to do so. But, I mean, if they're unable and unwilling, then absolutely 100%. They are in violation of the public good.
So for the past 10 years, the City of Vancouver is providing some funding. This year, they're giving about $35,000 in termination funding. Essentially, it's, we're going to give it to you again this year, but this is literally your last check.
Mm-hmm.
Get your act together, or we turn off the taps.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've essentially said is, you know, that $35,000 can easily go to a number of other service providers.
Yeah.
The Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter is not the only rape crisis center in Vancouver.
Yeah.
It is not the only women's shelter in Vancouver. It is not the only organization doing educational work. And there are other people willing to do the exact same work and not discriminate against trans people.
If they're willing to cooperate with other centers, like if they were to say something like, you know, we feel that trans women need a specialized level of support that we don't know if we can maintain that, but we will do intake and we will help them transition to another center that does have that specialty support work, then I think, like, there's a million escape hatches. There's a million ways to make this work where you don't come out looking...
It seems like the Vancouver Rape Relief has called this coercion. They feel there's a sense that they're feeling bullied by the government here into not discriminating.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel that it's undermining their autonomy as a women's group. Read in the fact that they mean exclusively biological women.
Yeah.
You know, I think what the challenge here for our listeners is that we understand that there is a distinctiveness, there is a
There's additional challenges.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is something that's unique and distinct to a woman needing help from a rape crisis center and a shelter. But
and I think it's fair if they were to say, we don't know if we are prepared for that. But then, I mean, the answer to that is become prepared for that. Yeah. Or develop a strong relationship with another center that is prepared for it.
Yeah.
And to say we won't even do intake, that's not the right answer.
Well, I think what they're doing is it's their counseling support, it's their consciousness raising, it's their support groups. They're just essentially turning them away at the door. I mean, I don't know what they have to do. If they look under their skirt, do they check their ID cards? Like, you know, and what, like, how are they making that discrimination? And it's not like they, it's, this isn't something new.
Yeah.
And I think what we really need to get across to our audience is that the Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter is not a martyr here. There are rape relief centers and women's shelters all across the country.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that there's a need for it. Mm-hmm. But they are in every town and city in this country, and the vast majority of them do work with trans women.
Yeah.
So why is the Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter being what I can only assume is stubborn on this?
Yeah.
And you know what? If the city of Vancouver is saying, you know, our own policies would not allow us to fund something that discriminates. Mm-hmm. So how on earth can we fund you and knowing that you will discriminate?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the city's made the right decision here.
And like, I came up with a pretty short but good list of escape hatches for them, where if they were to say our customers, our clients are not comfortable with it and we want to have a space for women who are uncomfortable with it, there's other ways, there's ways around it. There's a way of doing like the initial intake session being like, okay, we're going to set you up with someone else who can help you more effectively than us. I think there's a way to make it happen that doesn't come across looking horrible, if you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot that could be done. There's been no effort, apparently, from what we can see, made to integrate services for trans folks.
Or to meet halfway, even.
Yeah. They're just like, no, we are, you have to have been born woman, and, you know, they want the proof or there's no services. It is quite shocking, but c'est la vie. It's something that the city of Vancouver is going to deal with.
Someone will figure it out.
Absolutely. I do think that at the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned, it is public funding, it is public tax dollars, and I think that anybody that gets funded by the government of any provincial or federal level needs to be held to the highest standard.
Yeah.
And I don't think that funding an organization that literally breaks the provincial and federal anti-discrimination rules is really where money should be going.
Yeah.
So who knows? We'll be following it and other stories as they emerge. But we have run out of time.
Oh.
I know, disappointing. We are playing out with Avril Lavigne's Bigger Wow. And
is that the name of the song?
Yeah.
We played it earlier and I was like, this is okay. But okay.
I'm not a huge fan of Avril Lavigne's new album. You mentioned her and I'm like, okay, let's see what it's like. And I've just, none of them really wowed me. Except for Bigger Wow. That's sort of, yeah. But anyways, we'll work on it. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thanks for listening. Could show up at my front door on a white horse, I'll be ready. We can jump out of an airplane, we could fall like we're confetti, just like kites. I'm afraid of those heights. We could sail across the ocean, winter, summer, any season. You can kiss me on a mountaintop, don't ask me for a reason, just like kites. I'm afraid of those heights. No, no. 'Cause sooner or later, I just want a bigger wow. I'm not complaining. If you throw me up, I won't come down. Just say you're waiting for me. I'll meet you in the clouds. I just want a bigger wow. Ba 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 bigger. Na na na, na na na, bigger. Na na na, na na na, ba ba bigger. Wow.
quit tonight. Stop pretending, just admit it that you love it. We can light up all of Vegas and we never will unplug it. Or tonight, I'm afraid of those heights. No, because sooner or later, I just want.